the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
The preacher man says it's the end of time, and the Mississippi River, she's a going dry. The interest is up and the stock market's down, and you're only getting mugged if you go downtown. I live back in the woods, you see. My woman and the kids and the dogs and me. I got a shotgun, a rifle, and a four-wheel drive, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I can plow a field all day long. I can catch a cat. Fish from dusk till dawn. We make our own whiskey and our own smoke too. Ain't too many things these old boys can't do. We grow good old tomatoes and homemade wine, and country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. Because you can't starve us out and you can't make us run. Those women old boys raised on shotguns. We say grace, we say ma'am. If you ain't into that, we don't give a damn. We came from the West Virginia coal mines and the Rocky Mountains and the western skies. We can skin a buck, we can run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. I had a good friend in New York City. He never called me by my name, just Hillbilly. Grandpa taught me how to live off the land, and his taught him to be a business man. He used to send me pictures of the Broadway nights, and I'd send him some homemade wine. But he was killed by a man with a switchblade knife. For $43, my friend lost his life. I'd love to spit some beach nut in that dude's eyes and shoot him with my old 45, 'cause a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive. North California and South Alabama and little towns all around this land.
and run a trot line, and a country boy can survive. Country folks can survive.
Thank you. game is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
You're listening to Mad Science at www.shazoozradio.com. If you want to join in on some of the madness, jump over there to the superchat.html at shazoozradio.com. So, today I posted a few links over there in the video. Before I get to those links right there, I want to give you a brief rundown of, for those of you that have followed me for a long time, it's kind of like old news, but for those of you who have been around on my YouTube channel for a long time, pretty much got a good idea of what I'm about to talk about. My initial research in alternative energy, the Shaziz Mad Science channel on YouTube, is the Search for Free Energy. which there's a lot of individuals out there says there ain't no such thing as free energy. Apparently, they're not paying attention. But anyway, when I very first started off in alternative energy, I researched all kinds of subjects under the sun. Anything that have to do with electricity, I researched it. Researched alternative energy devices and some so-called free energy devices. So I know all the big name brands out there and all that kind of stuff of all the different people out there in alternative energy and so on and so forth. But I started off building different custom designs of what probably could be classified as an alternator. I actually turned old magnetrons from lawnmowers into high-voltage generators. I took fish tank air pumps, the coils out of fish tank air pumps, and made some pretty amazing little generators as well, using a 12-volt motor out of a fan in an automobile. I used that for my power source so that it wouldn't draw a lot of amperage and would actually spin it up pretty good. I made my own custom flywheels out of two-part epoxy resin and some pole pieces out of weed eater flywheels. I also made some generators using weed eater flywheels. But I was realizing that if I can get this thing to pulse one time per cycle with a weed eater flywheel that only has one magnet in it, I'd imagine what I could do if I could actually put more magnets in there and get it to pulse instead of one time per cycle, actually pulse four times per cycle. So I did a lot of research in on the high voltage portion of it and generation of power, different types of flywheels, some that hover above the coils and some that were surrounded by the coils. And I found that when you're dealing with Lenz's law, the ones that were the flywheels that actually went hovered above the coils seemed to have less drag and they seemed to work a lot better. And so with that said, up until the point when I got distracted by a few other devices and started going a little bit different in my research, that's pretty much what I was doing. I was building different types of generators, trying to get motor generators to work, and testing old 12-volt electric motors to see which ones could be turned into generators, and actually AC motors as well, which ones could be modified to be generators, and just basically using already existing stuff. Well, then I began to start working into some of the Tesla patents and stuff like that, looking into all the different things that Tesla was talking about, and I started building Tesla coils and different things and messing around with vacuum tubes and high voltage. And it dawned on me in that process that, you know, according to the conservation of energy, energy can neither be created nor can it be destroyed, but it can be changed. So that meant to me that you could actually take this energy, any type of energy, you could either speed it up or slow it down and actually change the frequency of that energy. You still have the same amount of energy, you just don't... You obviously can't run your electric motors off of high voltage alone because they require some current and a stronger magnetic field. And so there's certain majority of all the things out there that are standard off the shelves you can't run off of high voltage. The insulation won't hold up to frequency and basically will burn right through the insulation and short itself out. But nonetheless, the energy potential was still there. The key was to be able to move energy as rapidly as possible, to move it as fast as possible. So one of the things that needed to be done is once I do, I am able to move this energy, I need some way that I can store it, charge and discharge just as fast. And so that's why I'm kind of excited about one of the links, a couple of the links that I posted in there. One, Robert Murray Smith did a video here recently about hemp batteries, basically hemp capacitors, hemp batteries, whichever, the pretty much both the same. There is a couple links down here, one from Robert Murray Smith where he does a test on hemp batteries, and has got some really impressive results out of it. And so, you know, I'm really anxious to see how far he takes that. He's been doing a lot of work in graphene technology, and apparently not only is hemp batteries or hemp capacitors cheaper to manufacture because it's harder to do the graphene ones, more expensive wise and time consuming and such, but you know, the hemp is something that, you know, you can get pretty readily. And so the next one down there was actually a another video that had to do with supercapacitors being made out of what would have been classified as the waste material that comes off of some of the products that are made from hemp. There's so many different products that are actually made from hemp, and they make clothing and all kinds of stuff out of hemp. But in the process of making the clothing and getting the materials necessary for what they want to make the clothes out of, there's waste fibers that come up off of there. And so they're now using these waste fibers to actually make capacitors. And so that's very exciting, because now you got like a, you know, pretty natural deal, a bio-friendly thing, the way to make capacitors. And I'm really anxious to see the process of it, and also see what kind of advancements actually come up out of that. Because the type of energy that I've been working with my plasma technology, it's hard to understand for somebody who is really into electrical engineering, or, you know, got a lot of school book knowledge or high-tech terminology that they're used to hearing. But essentially, the plasma reactors that I put together are not standard like you would, like you'd see, you know, in the mainstream science. Essentially, what I'm doing is I'm taking high voltage, high frequency, and I'm energizing gas, a noble gas, some call them inert gases. You know, there's argon, helium, and halogen, and different gases like that. That when you energize them, you can get the molecules moving so rapidly in there that you can literally bring them into the fourth state of matter, being plasma. And so now, what do you got here? You've got the same amount of energy actually transformed into a completely different form of energy that your electric motors can't understand. They're not going to run off of plasma like that. And so what are you going to do with that energy? Well, if you can see the plasma, you have visible light, then that also means that you got visible heat. And so in order to take that energy in back into the realm of something that you can run your electric motors and stuff off of, then you can take that via thermal or even light for that matter. You still got the high voltage portion of it. And since voltage is pressure, I did a video here just the other day using some water balloons and some plastic jugs and basically some static electricity that I was showing that you can actually get work done with voltage alone, with static electricity. And in this video called Physics Toy 2, there's a couple water balloons that are hanging down inside of a couple 2-liter bottles that in the bottom of these bottles got just a little bit of water down the bottom of these bottles. And so if you've watched any of the videos out there pertaining to static electricity, you see all these experiments where people actually put static charge next to a stream of water, and you can see as the water bends towards the static charge. And so you're actually getting work done with that static electricity because you're moving that falling water towards that static charge. Well, in this video, I did a basically, I can't remember the name of the actual deal that they put together, but there's a bale that they use static electricity. It'll charge up one side, the ball will go towards that, and then it will pick up that charge, and then it will go across the other side and release that charge and go back and forth like a bell, swinging back and forth. And so I pretty much put this into motion with that, and I also had a piece of aluminum tape that had some ceramic magnets that were dangling from this. Now keep in mind, these ceramic magnets have a little bit of weight to them. All right, and inside the water bottles, I explained that I had two balloons that were filled with water. And from the back of one bottle to the back of the other bottle, I had a hose that basically these were sealed containers with a hose that went from one to the other. And so as that static is building up in there and that magnet is going back and forth and the magnet is tapping on each side of the bottle, you're actually getting a pressure difference inside that bottle. When you see that balloon is actually starting to move back and forth, and as the mass of that balloon filled with water moves back and forth, it's actually changing the pressure in one bottle to the next, back and forth. And then at the bottom of the deal, I actually had a neodymium sphere, about a 3/4-inch sphere, in a little plastic shot glass that, as the magnet is going back and forth, the magnetic field was just strong enough to cause that thing to wobble back and forth. Inside the bottom of the bottle, I also had two other neodymium magnet spheres that were setting down in the water. And as the magnet is going back and forth, it's causing the water to move back and forth inside there as the magnet's rocking in each one of these bottles. So if you really sit down and contemplate on what I just explained to you and actually watch that video and pay attention to what's going on, you're getting a lot of work done with just nothing more than static electricity and moving some magnets back and forth, you know, plus the actual weight and the weight of the magnet either hitting the side of the bottle or the static electricity attracting the water balloons that are dangling inside there, and so on and so forth. So, you know, it took a lot to move those balloons. But all this, it was initiated with static electricity. The static electricity and the aluminum tape down the bottom, each side of the bottles, was building up a charge, and then that charge would track the magnets with the aluminum tape to it and pick up that charge, and then it would go down to the other side with the lesser charge and discharge itself back and forth. And so, you know, that swinging motion, pendulum action, hitting the side of the bottle is actually changing the pressure inside that bottle, and the draw of the static on the water actually causing that water balloon inside the bottle to move, the magnets rocking all the other magnets that are, two of them were inside the water and one was sitting outside the system itself. So that's a whole lot of work being done by nothing more than static electricity, you know? And so it's proof of concept that if you actually took the time to, you know, investigate what was going on in there, that you could expand on this system. So basically, my research that has to do with high voltage can work in the realm of static electricity. It can work in the realm of high frequency, you know, using transistors to, you know, basically do like Tesla used to do with the knife switch, flipping it up and down really fast, you know. And as every time he'd close that circuit, he'd get a sudden surge from all the energy that was stored up behind the switch itself when the circuit was open. So anyway, you can energize a noble gas, argon, helium, halogen, I can't for the life of me remember all of them right at the moment, but you know, you can energize them into the fourth state of matter, being plasma. Now that you can see it, you got visible light, you got visible heat, and depending on how high the frequency is, depending on how bright the plasma would be. I've actually had plasma with really beautiful, brilliant purples all the way to a perfect white light that was basically a whole lot of heat. So you can take that heat away using all kinds of different processes in thermoelectrics, and then you can transfer that heat actually back into usable current. And moving this high voltage, high pressure really fast with the proper capacitors, you can store this energy for use on demand that you can turn around and then run the inefficient appliances that we basically use today in our homes. And so there's where my research basically was heading. And so I figured, I took all this time to step outside of my normal research and do some investigation on other people's research. And it kind of took away from what I was, my goal, what I already had in mind. And so with that said, I'm going back to my plasma research. I'm going to do a whole lot more videos on my plasma research. I'm actually going to keep doing the physics toys because it seemed to be getting a pretty good response with all these different physics toys videos. Because I want to use a whole lot of different things that I've learned throughout this entire process, in the search for free energy deal. So, knowing everything that I've learned about water and static and all that kind of stuff, falling water with the Lord Kelvin device produces static electricity. And that static charge, where they say it take one turkey I talked about in the last deal, said it'd take you 6 years to charge up your cell phone battery, and that's because, there's no expansion on what it is that was going on with that particular anomaly. Now, I posted some other videos over there from a YouTuber called Lid Motor. I really like Lid Motor's work. He does a lot of little bottle generators, static generators, and static motors and stuff like that. But this particular one, I actually posted a couple videos in there of a pulse motor that he did. He's got this pulse motor running off of a 1.5 volt battery. All the magnets are on the positive poles. And every time the magnet goes past the reed switch, it trips the circuit and causes it to energize the coil, which helps to spin it around. And you can watch this doggone video as that bottle that he made the pulse motor out of, it's getting some pretty good spin to it. And so I got to thinking, what if Lid Motor was to actually take that same concept that he's got going on right there with the 1.5 volt AA battery and make a static generator with that same bottle? See, the thing about static electricity is you don't have to have a lot of torque in order to be able to generate the static electricity. And from what I can see, the RPMs, and it's got just enough torque to actually build a static generator out of it. So then he would have an actual pulse motor that was actually producing high voltage. I've kind of dropped him, put a bug in his ear on a couple different occasions to ask him about trying to do just this, and I'll keep on it to see if I can get him to do that, to actually build a pulse motor combination with a static electric deal on there. Where most people don't see the possibilities and the implications of actually doing this, I see a really simple way to actually use a low amount of voltage to actually produce a high amount of voltage. Now, that's pretty impressive to me. Even though it's not going to have the current flow to run your electrical appliances like you would think, it still brings it up into the high voltage range. And the high voltage range is, like I said before, voltage is pressure. Pressure is what gets work done. And so if you can generate enough high voltage to literally charge a supercapacitor then in turn use that supercapacitor as a battery, one of these systems by itself might not actually do much. You know, maybe run some LEDs or some little motor on the other side. But if this system was designed properly, where you had multiples of these things that were running off of the same doggone coil system, you could still use one coil system to literally run multiple bottles. Think about this for a second. If you've got the pulse system sitting up there running off a 1.5 volt battery, and those neodymium magnets are spinning around, you can take another bottle without even ever having to touch the first bottle, build the same system with some magnets to make sure that these bottles can't attract each other, put some sort of spacer in between them so that they can't go nowhere, and every time those magnets are spinning, that magnetic field will interact with the magnets on the next bottle in line, and it will also be set up as a static generator. And so you got multiple static charges that are being generated by initial 1.5 volt battery pulse motor made out of a bottle that, you put a bunch of them in parallel down and have all these building a static charge as they're spinning around. And so this is where I'm talking about taking an anomaly that makes a pretty nifty little project to the next level, or even higher. The higher you could take it, just see how far you could actually do this thing. You know, when those magnets are spinning around, there's a lot of wasted energy up there around that general vicinity from those magnetic fields, and that's what I believe that video that I posted called Physics Toy 2 shows, that even though those magnets weren't moving a whole lot, they were still moving at a distance away from where those two ceramic magnets were actually being held by the aluminum tape. Now, I had tried that same process with some stronger neodymium magnets, which in turn, I know that neodymium magnets, you can get quite a range away from them things and move one magnet and they'll all move in conjunction with each other. And so there's all kinds of possibilities if somebody wants to take the time to sit around and experiment and see, how far you can take it. That's the whole key. But I'm really impressed with Lid Motors, the research that he does. And he actually explains in one of his videos about he has been doing some videos to replicate some of the people who have been out there faking alternative energy videos. But this particular video that we're talking about is not one of them. But he does do these videos not to show that, you know, how you can fake it, but to find out, to try to figure out what it is that they're doing, where they're actually hiding batteries or what kind of deal. I actually did a video called Magnet Battery also that is probably the second to the last one I did. And in this video, I showed basically how there were some folks out there cheating and saying that they had a free energy device. They would have a magnet and then a little piece of material in between a piece of metal spring that had another piece of metal at the end of it. Now, you can see this guy's actually running some little small motors off of this thing. Well, he goes through all the trouble to take it all apart and show everybody, look, there's no batteries in this thing. It just works. But in reality, the magnets themselves were the battery. Because you can take any two types of metal and you could put an electrolyte in between them and you could make a battery. I showed that in the video where I was actually getting a voltage off of it because I took some salt and put it on some cloth, which basically was an old piece of sock that I cut up, and I put them in between those magnets, and you could actually see that there was voltage on this thing. And you could actually charge it up briefly, and it would drop back down to whatever its full capacity would have been. But regardless, those two magnets with a better electrolyte, or even going as far as to do like the crystal batteries where you got these magnets, the pressure of these magnets are forcing these crystals together and actually helping to assist in generating more power. You know, this is what I think about when I see videos that are trying to literally fake, you know, free energy. They may have tried to pull a fast one on somebody, but in the process, they actually gave me more ideas. Not on how to deceive people on as far as, you know, free energy, but things that, you know, turn a couple magnets into, simple magnets into a battery, you know. Because all you had to do is put some salt water in between there and on a cloth, and basically you got a battery slash capacitor. And I also, I think at one point I used something else, maybe it was lemon juice or something like that too, because it had a little bit more acid in it that basically made a stronger electrolyte. But just that little simple concept came up out of somebody else out there trying to pull a fast one over somebody and tell them that they built a free energy device. Essentially, they didn't build a free energy device, they built a chemical capacitor. And so with that said, all these things that Robert Murray Smith's working on, you know, he did the graphene research with printable ink to build different things like capacitors, and even painted a heater on a wall using the printable ink, the conductive ink, graphene. And now that they're going to be using hemp pieces that would normally be waste material off of what they use to actually make the clothes and all that kind of stuff, that's even more exciting, because now you got some sort of natural stuff to go along with it. And then maybe you can take that same concept and build a battery using the hemp fibers and some citric acid from oranges or lemons or hedge apples or whatever. You know, so many different citric acid fruits out there, and you know, even that table salt or whatever. So there's all kinds of potentials to actually build you know, homemade batteries and stuff, and to get you know, like really decent results out of whatever. So that's basically where my research started and where it is at this point in time. You know, it's really simple to build a plasma reactor. It's just the fact that to do it the way that I want to do it, so that people can actually see inside this deal, to see the reaction that's occurring inside there, to be made out of glass, which doesn't necessarily have to be made out of glass. It needs at least to have some sort of sight glass where you can look inside and you can actually see what's going on. That's the hard part, because I got to get certain things machined, because this has to be sealed up. It needs a somewhat of a mild vacuum inside there, just like a regular vacuum tube would have, you know, the old radio tubes that you've seen in all the old TVs and radios and stuff like that. And also I want to be able to put a couple coils of copper tubing or stainless steel inside there to circulate fluid through. But once again, all of this has to be sealed up airtight, so that none of it can leak out, because, you know, argon has the capability, literally, electricity can follow a stream of argon out, so you're liable to take a lightning bolt to the face if you get your voltage up too high. And as far as the heat and pressure like that, taking away that heat via the water or liquid being circulated through the copper tubing, plus also being able to pick up a high voltage you know, charge that would build up on that copper tubing as well. So there's multiple implications to what actually could be used, that you could use this for. See, the mercury arc rectifier back in the late 1800s, it was a pretty impressive plasma reactor in itself. Now, they had to figure out a way to run Edison's high voltage DC motors with Tesla's AC current. And so they had to build some sort of rectifier in order to be able to move that energy from high voltage AC to high voltage DC. And that's how the mercury arc rectifier came about. Well, basically all it has is one little pool of mercury down in there, And that's why I say I go with the noble gases, because we all know the dangers of mercury. If you get, you know, it'll vaporize and then have an explosion. It's not necessarily something you want to breathe in. But with noble gases, they'll just dissipate into the air, helium float away or whatever. But basically, they sent the high voltage AC in to hit a pool of mercury, which heated up that mercury because it was like a dead short. Caused the mercury to vaporize into the gas, but the high voltage AC is still going in. Now it takes that mercury vapor gas inside there and energizes it even more, which basically turns it into the fourth state of matter, which is plasma. So you'd see this kind of like pinkish orange glow inside this deal, or depending on which ones they were using, which gas inside there, you might get a different color. You know, for every single one of the like neon, you can get all the different colors of neon, and you know, argon will have like a purple color to it. Somewhere on the Shazizz Radio and one of the Mad Science deals, might be on the podcast link, there's actually a list and some photos of the different colors of what all the noble gases look like when they're energized. So they make really pretty neon signs with all these things, you know. But the fact is that energy is actually traveling through that gas and making a completed circuit on the other side. And so if you go back and look at some of my videos, some of the things that I was doing with like fluorescent bulbs, and there was actually a guy out there, I posted a video link of his video where he was making capacitors out of aluminum tape and fluorescent bulbs. So he was actually picking up that radiant energy off of the fluorescent bulb as the fluorescent bulb was being energized, and he literally made a variable capacitor that by moving these two pieces of aluminum tape in and out, you could actually adjust the capacitance of it and raise and lower, you know, just like a variable capacitor. So that was using fluorescent bulbs, and these fluorescent bulbs, particular ones we're talking about, same like I use in my lab, are bulbs that no longer will work in the standard outlet, but they'll still light up using high frequency because of the gas involved inside there. So he took these deals and made capacitors out of them, and you know, once these capacitors would build up a charge, you could you know, arc those across to you know, regular type capacitors, and you could store that energy. So you could actually take energy off of a fluorescent bulb and then be able to use that energy on the other side. So what I'm talking about with my particular version of what I'm calling the plasma reactor is just that. It's a tuner. It's changing high voltage into, you know, the plasma state, and then being able to speed up or slow down the frequency on the other side by the input on the beginning of it. And so you could actually, you know, generate different types of frequencies off of this particular device, not to mention the heat involved when you energize these molecules. See, you got to visualize this thing. You can't see it in a microwave with your eyes. Unless you put certain types of gases in there or certain things, you can actually see a physical reaction of light. But inside a water molecule, when those microwaves are actually flying through there, they're rocking these water molecules back and forth so rapidly that they are in turn generating heat. And so, to some extent, there's actually light inside there being generated by the water molecules. Not to the extent where you can physically see it, but light is heat and heat is light, according to physics laws. So, if that's the case, then when you're cooking, when you're boiling your water in here, you've got some bit of light going on. You know, maybe in a spectrum. Look like we got Thomas on there. Hello, you're live.
Hey.
ShazizzRadio.com. How's it going, Thomas?
It's going.
It's going.
Barely.
Okay, have you been listening in at all? No.
Nope.
So, So my buddy Thomas is coming in sort of blind here. I was talking about plasma and high voltage and pressure and hemp. They're making supercapacitors using the waste product off of hemp, which is the fibers that they don't use for the hemp. They've actually been getting better results than the graphene. Robert Murray Smith recently did a video where he made a hemp battery and tested it out and got some pretty amazing results as far as the time of how long these batteries would once you charge them up, would take to discharge.
Hello, you're live. This is Radio.
Wow, I remember hearing that. I remember saying that. Echo. So anyway, Robert Murray Smith's doing some hemp batteries, and there's other companies out there doing some supercapacitors using hemp. There was actually a college involved. I can't remember which college they mentioned in there that is doing research in there. And so how my plasma research came into play in this conversation was that when I energize any of the noble gases into the fourth state of matter, being plasma, that's changing that energy that I got off of the initial generator into a completely different form. Now I need to be able to figure out a way to take that energy back into a usable form on the other side. And so where that is basically being able to move energy rapidly into a system that is capable of charging and discharging rapidly, which aka the supercapacitor. You see what I'm saying? So basically what I'm going to end up getting off of this deal is, first off, I'm going to say just a massive reduction of lens effect on the generator side, if not a complete elimination of the lens effect on the generator side, then turning that energy into a completely different form of energy, which is the fourth state of matter. Now we have visible light and heat generated, plus we have the radiant energy, basically that it would be the waste energy of what it, the process that I just... See, all that energy that come up out of the first generator, it's got to go somewhere. It's just like your internal combustion engine. When it's producing that heat, and those heat would be classified as loss, it's got to go somewhere. And so as you're energizing this argon into the plasma state, you've got a lot of energy going on that has to go somewhere. High voltage is pressure, and so now you're pressurizing this container. Plus, you now have a temperature difference with inside this container from the plasma, all these argon molecules beating each other up inside there, moving so rapidly that now it's also generating heat. So this energy's got to go somewhere. I literally blew a hole in the side of a vacuum tube. I mean, it got hot enough inside that vacuum tube that it burnt a perfect circle in the side of that tube before it released that energy. And so I know the heat is there because I've seen the glass, how it blew out the side of that doggone tube. So now I knew that I overpressurized that doggone tube, and I started off with 12 volts, and I can't remember how many milliamps, but was generating 20,000 volts that I'd then in turn run through the system and then in turn run through this tube in order to get the results that I did. So the energy's got to go somewhere. I'm going to take it away in the form of heat. I'm going to take it away in the form of radiant energy, because each one of the coil systems that will be coming outside of this deal will act as the anodes and the cathodes to the mercury arc rectifier. So if you look at a mercury arc rectifier, it kind of looks like a octopus. It's got anodes and cathodes at the bottom, top, you know, whatever. And when you heat up that mercury, build that gas up inside there, that energy's got to go somewhere, so it goes out the other side as rectified DC current. And so on this reactor that I'm talking about building, which basically would be the equivalence of a mercury arc rectifier, with the exception is you're not using mercury vapor, you're using argon gas instead, And inside the container, you have coil systems that are able to circulate any liquid through via a pumping system or whatever. And those are made out of either copper or stainless steel, which now is picking up radiant energy off of this plasma reaction that's going on inside this chamber. It's going to be basically the equivalence of sticking a fork in the microwave and turning it on. All right, you're going to get energy on that metal that you didn't want. And so you get this crazy reaction going on there. Well, inside this reactor, this is the energy that I do want. I'm going to use the heat off of the plasma, plus I'm going to use the radiant energy expelled by the process that's going on in there, these electrons beating each other up, and the radiant energy that comes off of that, to basically have rectified DC current off the outside of this thing. You see where I'm going there, guys? Anybody? No? Yeah? No? Yeah? No?
Yeah, you've been talking about this for a while. Just gotta wait to see it happen.
Yeah, well, what I've been waiting for this time, because I have access to a lot of capacitors. But the charge and discharge rate on some of these capacitors, it takes a little longer to charge some of these capacitors than would be, like a supercapacitor. You can charge them rapidly, and you can discharge them rapidly. And see, that's the key, being able to charge and discharge it rapidly to take the energy that I want off this reactor and put them into these capacitors and start changing that energy back into a form that you can use again to run your motor. So, like, okay, what's all the hubbub about this deal? Why not just run your doggone stuff right directly off of the generator itself? Because once you invoke Lenz's law, for every single light bulb you turn on, that generator is going to drop down in efficiency. The more electron flow is allowed back into that generator head, the harder the driver force on the other side is going to have to work in order to keep up with the demand of the energy that you want out the other side. So at some point, if your generator is capable of running, let's say, 1,000-watt light bulbs, and you put 2,000-watt light bulbs on the doggone thing, it's going to drop on its face. It's going to lock up. The engine's going to get hot because it can't. It's trying to turn the deal, but it can't any longer. And that's why every one of these electric motor running an electric generator head always fails. Because if they're running that electric motor and they can turn this generator head, it's when there's no load on it, it'll run freewheel, it'll run fine. But the moment they put a load on that, then that's where the problem begins, because you can never get out more energy than you're putting in. And so if you're trying to run this off of 12 volts and you're trying to generate at least 12 volts off the other side, then you can get 12 volts off the other side until you put it under a load, which in turn, now that thing's going to start bogging down. When it bogs down, you go from where you got 12 volts to maybe down to 11 or 10 volts, which is not enough to rerun that system. But imagine if you could take that same amount of voltage, move it away from that generator head to never invoke Lenz's law on the generator head itself. Move that energy away, store it rapidly into supercapacitors, and then bring that energy back to the other side to where you're not going to invoke Lenz's law. You take that one step out of that deal, and you'll get more efficiency. At the very least, you should get a better efficiency to make that battery to extend the longevity of how much battery capacity that you got. If you're putting some sort of energy back into that battery, then the battery should last a little bit longer than it normally would have. So it could be something as simple as it would only do for you that it would make your battery last a little bit longer so you didn't have to charge it as often. I think that you could actually move it a lot further more, because once you get that energy out there into different directions, where now you've got heat energy that you can draw from, You got radiant energy that you can draw from, which is already rectified DC current, because as it's coming out of the generator head, it's AC. Once it gets into the reactor, it becomes the plasma state, which is a high voltage, high frequency, pressurized energy inside there. Now, the electrons can't flow back in the other direction, so you end up with high voltage DC on the other side that you can in turn charge into capacitors, bleeding over into battery banks, and so on. So, what do you guys think? Nobody? Anybody? Biker one, or radio chick.
All right. I muted my mic because when y'all invited me in, I was listening to the radio show, and I didn't turn it off before it came in. That's where we got all that double talk. Sorry about that, folks.
So I'm excited about the hemp, because hemp is a natural product. It's something that, you know, you're not, you know, some people had concerns about graphene being potentially dangerous, kind of like lead or mercury or something like that, you know, that's just something, not something that you want to get in your bloodstream or something like that. Well, if you're using hemp instead of graphene, then that to me sounds like it would be a lot safer process than, you know, what I've been told so far. You see what I mean?
Yes, I do.
And if they can charge and discharge as rapidly as they're talking about that the supercapacitors use, that are using graphene technology, graphene technology is still good, but it's a little more expensive, if not a lot more expensive than using the hemp fibers off of what would have normally been the waste product of, you know, making clothing, for example. You see what I mean? And so if they're better and faster, that's the key. To take this high voltage, high frequency energy and move it as rapidly as possible from point A to point B and be able to charge and discharge that doggone capacitor on demand, that's where my technology would then, in turn, take off, where people would actually get noticed to it and want to work with it. So you should have had this already figured out, Raymond, because...
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
The doggone mercury arc rectifier, it was a plasma reactor. Plain and simple. That's what it was.
Yep.
It was also a diode, or a rectifier. You know, and I've seen some folks that's had some of these doggone things. Photo Induction had one that he kind of abused the heck out of that thing with high voltage. But I would love to get a hold of one of them old mercury arc rectifiers. My fear is, though, that, you know, you get that thing energized and something crazy happens and that mercury gas escapes into the air. You know, that's not something you want to breathe in. So that's where I went with the argon and helium and stuff like that.
Speaking of the argon, I've got a thing I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to do it off the air when you take a break. All right?
Okay. So, anyway, how's your guys' research going on your side of the fence?
Well, I've been working on my drinking bird and a two-stage oscillator again.
Well, that's cool.
I've had a lot of success with it.
I've been thinking about a lot of the concepts of both your two-stage oscillator and the drinking bird. Now, I don't know if you got to see this last video that I did called Physics Toy 2. But before you guys came on, I was explaining what was going on in there. I used static electricity off of a Van de Graaff generator to energize this, basically, I think they called them a Franklin bell, where you use static electricity, it charges up this plate, and the ball is attracted over to it, and it takes on that charge, and then it is attracted to the opposite side, and back and forth, discharging, charging, and discharging. So, yeah, I think that's what they were called, Franklin bells. Well, I took that idea and I expanded on it by taking a piece of aluminum tape and hanging some ceramic magnets on this tape as like a weighted pendulum on there. And so inside the 2-liter bottles, I had some water balloons that were dangling inside there. And at the bottom of the bottle, I also had a little bit of water in the bottom of the bottle with two neodymium spheres in the bottom of the bottle. And as this magnet is rocking back and forth, it's got just enough magnetic field to interact with these magnets inside there. It's also actually interacting with the water itself, because water is a dipole molecule. So to some extent, the water is trying to align and realign itself every time that that magnet goes back and forth, charging and discharging. Not to mention the actual charge puts off a magnetic pulse as well. But the other portion was that if you look at some of the videos out there having to do with static electricity, water is attracted by a static charge. You can see as the falling water comes down and they put a static charge next to it, the water will actually bend towards that charge. And so using the Franklin bell and the static charge buildup, you can actually see inside the bottle where the water balloons are starting to rock back and forth. Now, in the video, I didn't have it perfectly balanced on a level surface, so I didn't get as good a result as I had whenever I had it actually on the floor on a level surface. But you can still see the water balloon inside there moving back and forth. And then on the outside, I had a little shot glass that had a little plastic shot glass that had a little metal, or had a little neodymium sphere in there as well. So not only was that magnet that was rocking back and forth moving the magnets inside the water bottle at the bottom, that as those magnets are moving back and forth in that water, they're actually moving the water down by the force of the magnet. The water balloons themselves were rocking back and forth. The weight of the ceramic magnet using the pendulum deal going on, and as it swings over to discharge, it would thump the side of the bottle back and forth on both sides. And so you're getting a whole lot of work going, a whole lot of work out of static electricity if you pay attention to what's going on in this video. And on the outside, where the neodymium sphere was in the shot glass, you can actually see that that sphere is wobbling back and forth as that magnetic field is going back and forth like that. On the outside of the bottle, from one side of the bottle to the opposite side of the bottle, I actually had a hose that connected and were sealed on both sides so that any motion inside that deal with the mass of that water going back and forth would change the air pressure inside whichever bottle the motion was occurring, and cause a pressure and a vacuum back and forth. As it wobbled one way, it created a vacuum. As it wobbled back the other way, it created pressure. And the same thing with the water moving in the bottom of it. It's just getting some sort of, you know, pressure vacuum going on inside this deal by any motion that would occur inside there. Now, it wasn't happening to the extent where you could actually see the bottle expanding from pressure and contracting from the vacuum and such, because I'm not exactly sure that I had it perfectly sealed up. But when you do put a water balloon inside of a bottle, you can actually see as it changes the pressure enough inside that bottle, because these balloons weren't tied off. They were carefully wound around and stuck over the top of the bottle neck, and then the cap was screwed down on carefully to make a seal. And so underneath the weight of that water is pressure. And anytime there was any kind of bouncing up and down, it would change that pressure, you know, like drawing it back would create a vacuum, pushing it down would create pressure. So you could actually see the outside of that water bottle moving in and out depending on what motion was going on inside there. That's why I stuck the hose going from one side to the next to change the pressure in both sides for any motion that was occurring in there. So what that video shows, even though it's not the best video in the world, but what it shows is that you can actually get physical work done with static electricity. You know, there are atmospheric motors out there that they've done, you know, static electricity with, and there's other versions of the static motor that they've done, that some of them, which like Laser Saber did one that was getting some really amazing torque off of. And so basically, between what he was showing, what I showed there, you can not only get, you know, some RPMs, but you can also get torque as well. Because if you think about the weight of that water And for that static to be able to even budge that water is impressive. And even if the static itself wasn't budging that water, even if it was the pressure from that magnet being coming back and forth to each bottle and hitting the side of that deal, causing a pressure wave to cause that balloon to move, regardless of how exactly it was going on, that water balloon was rocking back and forth like a pendulum. What do you think? Man, you guys are on top of your game today.
I had my mic muted. I was eating my coffee. I'm sorry. Yeah, I think you're right. I love it, man. I love everything you're talking about. I mean, I was listening to the show before I came on the air with you, and I was amazed. Absolutely amazed.
If static electricity can actually get work done, like I know it can. I showed it, all right, and Laser Saber showed it, and Lidmotor's done some. Lidmotor made not only a static motor, but he turned the same static motor into a static generator. So
yeah, I saw quite a few of his videos.
Yeah.
Genius. He's an absolute genius.
I'm trying to get him to do this latest pulse motor that he did and add it in conjunction with his static motor or static generator, because if he's taking a 1.5 volt battery and using a reed switch to make a pulse motor, and on the flyback of the pulse that it's actually lighting up an LED, he's getting several things going on. First, he's taking the energy from the battery, causing the pulse motor to be able to spin, and on the expansion and collapsing of the field, he's actually picking up a charge, lighting up an LED. It don't sound like a lot to most folks, but he's getting work done. He's lighting that LED up with that deal. So there's two things going on there. Now imagine if he put a static generator at the end of that, all right, to where now he's building up a static charge. Just like, you know, he did with his pill bottle generator, static generator. And the cool thing about static electricity is you don't have to have a lot of torque to generate static electricity. You don't even have to have a lot of RPM. You just have to have that change in the atmosphere of the aluminum plates as they're spinning around each other, you know, and you got little brushes to pick up that charge as it comes by. And then you can build that charge up and you can charge capacitors with it. So let's say he gets a good enough static charge off of this doggone thing and turns that energy into, you know, pumps it into capacitors and is able to even extend the life of the doggone battery. You know, he's used Joule circuits which extend the life of the battery. It'll drain it down to, you know, where normally your battery wouldn't run something, but now it's still running something. It's taking very, very low energy from that battery and being able to do physical work with it. So if now you're putting energy back to that same system that is not only running off a low charge to begin with because of the Joule thief, but you're actually putting a charge out good enough to keep that thing sustained, at the very least, the very, very, very least, you just made that thing so super efficient, it's ridiculous. A Laser Saber makes some 3D printed static motors and super efficient motors, that some of which have been running for a long time. You know, they don't take very much energy, but essentially it's a pulse motor generator, and it's actually taking voltage back off of the process and dumping it back into a capacitor bank, which is keeping it going even longer. You know, he says it's not perpetual motion, but I can see that if that thing was to be expanded on, man, if you did some precision work, which he does to do precision work, but if you took that thing to the extreme, to some engineers who could literally get it down to the most precise bearings, it wouldn't be the less friction as possible, or even turn it into frictionless bearings using magnetics, there's no limitations to what you could do with this. And even if it's not going to be able to be capable of generating electricity in the standard form, the current sense of how we understand and use electricity, if it can produce high voltage, static charge, then that's what I want to see. Because you can take that high voltage, static charge, and you can move that high voltage rapidly. If you can dump that high voltage, which is pressure, down into capacitors in the proper manner, or even whatever comes next after supercapacitors, then you can get work done. You can get work done with a static charge. I've already proven that. And so that tells me that, you know, maybe we're just not using electricity to our advantage. We're energy hogs, man. We waste a lot of energy to do work that we could get done a lot simpler. One of the other things that I noticed in the process of doing that experiment with the bottles was I was getting a good ion wind off of this thing that felt like there was a fan running beside it. I mean, I was getting cool air moving towards me as if there was a fan running inside there. I don't know if you guys have ever messed around with Van de Graaff generators or any of the static generators out there, or even a negative ion generator. But around those, you get an ion wind that actually is a cooling effect. Have you ever noticed that? Either one of you?
No, I haven't. I haven't been into the ion thing in a long time. But I know there's something there, and I know the power is there. And your thing about high voltage,
yeah,
being able to use it to produce work, voltage, you've said it several times on this show, voltage is nothing more than pressure. But if you take 5 gallons of water and you pour it on a 2x4, you're going to have a wet 2x4.
Yeah.
But 5 gallons of water running through a high-pressure washer, yeah, you can cut a hole in that 2x4.
Yep.
And I've done it.
So, taking what you just said right there, you know, with water, water has a lot of energy potential. Not just, you know, from splitting it into its two separate components, you know, hydrogen and oxygen, but, you know, water is, you can't compress water like you can gas. And so, with that water being, you know, pressurized behind it, the force that you get from water is literally strong enough to cut through steel, man. You know, have you ever seen water cut through steel?
Yes, I have. And I was getting ready to say they actually have hydro torches. They're water under so much pressure they can actually cut right through steel.
Yep. And so that's pretty impressive. And there's another thing, too, also about making hydrogen torches, was that it gets a cleaner cut. It's a lot less expensive to run than oxygen and acetylene, and it seems to get a cleaner cut. There's a, with all the different metals, you know, because of the way that the hydrogen and oxygen are interacting with the metal. You know, there's some welding techniques that you actually use argon gas to smooth out the arc so that you can actually weld better. Whereas the hydrogen torch seems to do it, you know, because, you know, maybe it's adding more oxygen to it, and maybe the hydrogen or the electrical process that, of the two either separating and combining back and forth or actually assisting the process of cutting with it. If you can cut with something, you can weld with something. Period.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, pretty interesting stuff, man.
You know, they were using water pressure and for cutting aluminum over 50 years ago.
Yeah, they also used it for mining.
Yep.
They tore up entire sides of the mountains.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, they tore out entire sides of mountains, man. So,
so what's the difference between water and electricity? I mean, voltage is nothing more than pressure.
Yep.
You get high voltage, you've got a lot of pressure. You can do a lot of work. You just got to wrap your mind around it. That's all.
Now, imagine if you combined all this stuff into one device, you know? we know that water and magnetism will interact with each other. Water with and microwaves will interact with each other. It's not just microwaves. Water is a dipole molecule, so if you send any wave through there, even though you can't physically see it with your eyes, I wish there was a way that you could actually see the result that's going on. You know, how a microwave actually causes your food to cook inside the microwave oven. You can see that effect with argon. You get visible light. If you've got magnets in the vicinity, you can actually see vortexes being produced inside there. You can see rings, you know. It's almost like putting magnet paper over a magnetic field. You can see where the lines of flux are going. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
So if you could take all these things that we talked about, put them in conjunction with one another, you could build a perfect device, something that would, you know, maybe separate the water into its two components temporarily long enough to bring it back together and build up a electrical charge, or actually, before it actually even comes back together, use it to cut through metal or whatever, do some work in one stage, and then do some work as it's recombining on the other stage, and then actually build fresh water out the exhaust, then the implications are limited. Water's like the perfect fuel, man. The perfect energy source. You know, because you can get static charges built up with water. The Lord Kelvin device did that. And so, you know, falling water, static electricity interaction with water, causing the water to change directions in midair, you know, as it's falling down. That's pretty impressive stuff as far as I'm concerned. So, in the search for free energy, learned a lot of things about physics, a lot of do's and don'ts, and a lot of tricks to get around certain things, you know, and basically come to the conclusion at the end that plasma and water is the key. You know, you could energize hydrogen into the plasma state. Now, as long as it was within a vacuum, you wouldn't have the issues of an explosion as far as, you know, like a spark in open air. You see the difference there?
Yes, I do.
But you can energize any gas into the plasma state. It just doesn't seem to me at this point in the game, well, mostly because I don't have access to a lab with a really thick...
Basically, isn't that how a plasma torch works?
Yeah.
It turns the air. I mean, just plain air. We're not talking acetylene or propane or hydrogen. We're talking just plain air.
Yeah.
Turns it into a plasma and cuts a piece of steel.
And you'll get a really brilliant white light after that, so you know there's a lot of heat going on.
A lot.
So, if we know that plasma has a capability of cutting through steel, then we know that we have access to a lot of heat. Now, obviously, if you got a plasma reactor and it's generating white light inside the doggone thing, that's probably going to be just a little too much heat for the system, you know, for the whatever metal you put inside there, because it'd probably just finally eat through it. You know, even a tungsten element can only handle so much. But the key about the plasma is you can speed up and slow down the interaction between the gas molecules by the input side. So put less energy to it means you got less heat going on. It's like turning the stove up and down.
Question. You love playing around with plasma, this, that, and other. Would a plasma torch help you any at all in your experiments?
Well, yeah, I guess it would, because I could actually show that, you know, like you just explained a little earlier, I could actually show the effect that's going on, because you're actually getting the atmosphere around it to energize into the plasma state. You know, within that realm, you also have the Venturi effect going on, because it's actually bringing atmosphere from around down into it to actually intensify. It's basically feeding the fire.
Well, Thomas and I had plans to come and visit you in a couple of weeks, and I think maybe I might ought to bring one of my plasma torches. I've got four of them.
Cool.
Maybe I'll bring one up down that way. In fact, yes, I've got one. I've got one I want to give you.
Really?
Yes, really.
Wow.
The rheostat on it, where you set the amount of heat, something's wrong with it, and it is stuck wide open. But I think you, knowing the electronics the way you do, you could open it up and find the part that's bad and replace it. It's a combination TIG welder, stick welder, and plasma torch.
Wow. You know, that would open a gateway to being able to cut through some, I got waste steel around here like you wouldn't believe.
Well, this thing is set wide open, and it'll cut through 1-inch solid steel.
Well, then that would be something that I could actually manufacture some of my own parts that I've been talking about.
You got it, Pilgrim. That's your birthday present.
Wow. Well, thank you very much, man. That's awesome.
It's your,
you know, what I've been talking about on this deal right here for the longest time, I've been trying. This isn't just for my research. It's hopefully for benefiting everybody out there that's actually going to, you know, take these ideas and run with them. You know, when I show things, videos like Lid Motors, you know, static generators and his bottle pulse motors, most folks look at these, and I actually saw people thumb his video down, which really frustrates the crud out of me, because he said there, and he does these things, and he puts it out there for people. And if you took these things, he's getting some efficiency out of these bottle motors that is mind-blowing. Now, if you sat down and actually did the math, if you took that bottle and you weighed it on a scale that could, you know, weigh into grams or whatever, you know, there's really precise scales out there. If you weighed that bottle, whatever the weight of that bottle is, and then did the math on that, and did the math on whatever friction, because he's not using bearings on there, he's just using the doggone a pin going through the back of the bottle, and then the bottle itself is, you know, the plastic is, you know, smooth enough that it lets it spin, but you are getting some friction losses in there. And then you take and calculate in the battery itself and how long this thing will actually run and, you know, the torque that it's actually putting out. It's pretty impressive what he's getting out of doggone AA battery, man. A 1.5-volt battery is actually doing that much work. And that much work that's going on there is more than enough to build a static generator out of. You build that static charge out, and you got some high voltage going on now. You see what I'm saying? It's not just that he made this out of recycled trash, you know, ice cream sticks and plastic bottles, but the fact that he's getting that mass, the mass that is the bottle itself, to be able to move, to do physical work, using a battery that's almost dead. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And they're using the Jewel Thief circuit that they've been using. It's even more impressive. You know, being able to take a circuit that basically will get the most energy out of that doggone battery. That's pretty impressive stuff. And like I said, the average Joe just kind of look at it like, oh, you know, ain't no big a deal. Just like my video with the static... you know, basically the Franklin Bell or whatever they call it, you know, it's going back and forth. But when you see that being going back and forth like that using the static charge, you also got to factor in, you got the weight of that magnet. That magnet has to be fighting against gravity, so there has to be some force, some really serious pull to that thing in order to be able to bring this thing from a stable position to back and forth like that. You know, if it's an inch apart, there's some math to be done there. The weight of the magnet, the travel path, the fact that when this magnet is going, it slams into the side of the bottle, and then whenever it goes back the other way, it slams into that side of the bottle. The pressure wave inside the bottle, the fact that the water balloons are full of water and they're actually moving. You think that on a small scale, there's an acoustic wave going inside there that is causing a wave inside that water. See what I mean?
Yep.
So if that those, all the stuff that I factored in right there was factored in the calculations, you'd be surprised at what numbers you'd come up out of there, and that if you took and expanded on it, there's no limit to where you could go with it. What do you think?
Uh-huh. I agree totally. Completely.
So, Justin's inside the chat room giving the rash about what is static. Static is the static that you're giving me, brother. So, it's not just about that. It's about all the different types of ways to move energy from one place to the next. You know, right now, even when you run your doggone electric fan, you're wasting energy while you're running the electric fan. You can measure the wasted energy. That's why they got a tool such as a doggone wireless AC tester. You know, you get this wireless AC tester anywhere near anything that has doggone AC current, you can see how far that field is actually coming outside of it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, there's wasted energy going on. Let's see if I can get one of these things close to something it's got. These things aren't very doggone expensive either. Well, I got all my power cords towards the ground down there. Can you hear that, Raymond?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right next to the doggone power cord. There's wasted energy right on the outside of that power cord. You can do that same process with anything that has a transformer.
Huh.
But did you got hear that one?
Yeah.
Battery's getting low on that one. But if you got energy that you can measure outside of the doggone cord, then that tells me that you're wasting energy. Plain and simple.
Yep.
Oh, so I think Thomas, you still there? Did you go to sleep?
What do you mean?
I mean,
just listening.
Oh. All right. So let me see what's going on in the chat room down there. I usually. Sometimes I don't like looking in there because it's distracting. Anyway. So, out there in the alternative energy communities, knuckleheads out there trying to pull a fast one over somebody, but I kind of like the knuckleheads to some extent because in the process of them trying to be sneaky, they unlock keys to other things, such as the video that I talked about earlier on the show, the magnet battery video. Right, I did a video with a couple neodymium magnets, an old sock with some salt water, and then I actually used some lemon juice at one point in the video. And all you had to do is take the magnet, salt water on the sock, and put this sock in between two magnets and put a voltmeter on there, and you got a voltage. Pretty cool, huh?
Yeah. That is.
Well, the dude that was doing the free energy device had a insulator between a magnet, a spring, and a little piece of metal. And so he's telling me, he's taking this thing apart, and he's telling everybody, well, look, there ain't no batteries on there. You can clearly see that there are no batteries. Well, in reality, what was going on is the device itself was the battery. Because he had a little pad that he stuck in between there, and I asked him in the deal, but I don't think I ever got a response, what type of electrolyte he was using on the insulator that he put in there. Because he was actually running a little electric motor off of this thing. So, basically, he probably made the equivalence of a 3-volt battery with whatever material that he put on that insulator between the magnet and the spring. Same way you make any battery, man. Imagine using that same technology with the crystal battery technology. where, you know, the crystal battery, as the expansion of the crystals, as the crystals grow inside there, it produces pressure inside there, which helps the piezoelectric effect, right? Well, right. You got two magnets, and you got that paste between these two magnets. Those magnets drawing towards each other, that's a lot of pressure. You should get some pretty good results out of that magnet. See what I'm saying?
Right.
So, if you took, what's his name, John Hutchinson's, he does some crystal batteries where he makes a certain type of, mixes a certain type of material together in like a paste and a clay kind of deal, and he sticks it down in these metal tubes and he makes these batteries that last a long time. Lid Motors done some, Laser Saber's done some, there's several other people out there who have done crystal batteries. And the crystal batteries, like I said, rely on when those crystals are growing inside there and expanding, they're actually creating a piezoelectric plus a chemical reaction from the materials together that cause these batteries to last a long time. Problem with some of the way the crystal batteries are is that after a certain period of time, they'll start pushing, you know, material out the other end or even cracking the casing because of the expansion in there. Now, if you had these magnets in between there in a tube that would allow, you know, for this expansion, the magnets would keep the constant pressure on it, but as the pressure got more and moved the magnets a little bit farther apart from each other, it should give you a better result the longer this thing goes on. What do you think?
Yep.
So, Justin said salts and borax. There you go. So, I'm thinking, you know, with everything we've learned out there from all the different alternative energy researchers, I think I'm going to go back to my plasma technology and do more research on that. I'm actually going to see at the lowest voltage, the lowest current watts and amps that it can, that you can use to energize gas into the plasma state. I know that I've done it with a 1.5 volt battery with a 555 timer, because a 555 timer has the potential of generating a high frequency wave. If you actually take apart some of these little gizmos that they got for little miniature fluorescent lights, for like they use for flashlights and stuff, you'll note that they got a circuit in there similar to what it is I'm talking about, that produces enough high energy to energize the fluorescent bulb that are in those little flashlights. I actually got UV lights. I got a couple of those over here, these UV lights, black lights.
Mm-hmm.
And another one of the experiments that I want to do that I want to combine in conjunction with the plasma is that I want to find at what stage visible light coming from the sun, the exact light range, the exact frequency of the light range, light spectrum, that actually gets the solar panels to working.
You need a spectrometer.
Yeah. So if I can,
I told you the best way to make one.
Yeah.
Use two pieces of polarized plastic and some cellophane in between it.
So that you can see the exact range at what.
When you rotate it around, it adjusts what frequency is coming through that.
Okay.
So you can use that to control what frequency is hitting your solar cells, and just keep rotating it around to and watching your voltmeter.
Why this is important is because there's a guy out there on YouTube who is actually working with LEDs to test solar panels indoors without having to take them out in the sun, to be able to test their efficiency, how they're working or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can imagine if you could design an LED system with maybe a number of different colors of LEDs depending on what frequency you actually have to get a doggone solar panel to start generating electricity, if you could design a solar or a LED system that could get that thing to generate electricity indoors, then any source that available, let's say for instance it was infrared that was actually doing it, all right, now you know that you can use the infrared spectrum to energize a solar panel. So if you've got an infrared heater across the room facing that solar panel, then you should be able to charge up a little bit of something going on. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
Obviously not going to be the same intensity of the sun, but what I have noticed, and I don't know if you guys have seen these yet, there's little toys, little solar powered toys that rock back and forth. They got a really super efficient motor inside there. I've watched these things be able to move using nothing more than fluorescent lighting. It was dark outside, and the only thing was going on was the fluorescent light. But these things were sitting there moving back and forth using nothing more than fluorescent lighting. So what's happening there, man? You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
So if you can get a solar panel to work off of fluorescent lighting, and somewhere within that fluorescent lighting, the right light spectrum is in there. So if it is UV that's causing it, is it heat that actually causes the solar panel to work? Or is it the UV ray itself that's actually causing the solar panel to work? You know, you can look up out there to ask a lot of questions, but I don't see anybody explaining exactly how the solar panel works. We know how LEDs work. And we know that photons, when photons hit the material in LEDs, that they can actually generate a charge in a reverse direction. When the electrons interact with the material that's in the LED, it releases photons of light. And if photons are responsible for the solar panel working, then that means that you can get photons out of charging up LEDs. Does any of that make any sense to you?
Uh-huh.
So essentially, using high voltage, I know I can light an LED. I can light an LED wirelessly using high voltage. Done it. It's been in a lot of my videos. Where you can hold an LED right up in midair, or anywhere in the general vicinity of a Tesla coil, and you can light that LED, and you are the ground.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty impressive. So I'm saying, how far can we take it? Find out the exact spectrum that it takes to energize a solar panel and then turn around and build a system that would, what if my plasma reactor was putting out the right spectrum of light? And what if argon wasn't the right spectrum of light? Could I then in turn use helium or halogen or neon or any of the other noble gases, because every one of these gases will energize to a different color. What do you think?
Yep, I like it. I do like it.
And in reality, because I've had argon literally up to the white light, I mean, that, you know, there's a lot of heat. When you got white light, you got a lot of heat. So I know that you can tune it all the way up to white light. You can tune it back down to purple, you know, and different ranges of purple from all the way up in there. So if you could energize the right gas into the plasma state over the top of a solar panel, then could you replicate what the sun is actually doing to cause that solar panel to function? Is it the heat from the sun that makes the solar panel work? Or is it the actual light spectrum itself? That's the key. Because heat is light and light is heat, vice versa, right? That's what they say. And so, essentially, I answered my own question, because heat is actually causing that doggone solar panel to generate electricity. So essentially, a solar panel could be nothing more than a really efficient thermoelectric generator, and you just haven't been told about that. You know, it requires sunlight. But what if it didn't require sunlight? Has anybody ever measured a solar panel in complete darkness in a hot room or something? Now, wouldn't that be an interesting experiment?
Yep, it would.
Uh-oh. We're getting knocked down.
Yeah! Alright, let's take a quick music break, and I'll go... Somebody always got to call the phone right in the middle of the wrong doggone time. So I'll throw a couple songs on. You're listening to Mad Science. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Peace and love, everybody.
Hey, Dr. Steele, look at my new trumpet.
Well, that is a fine trumpet, soldier. Wow, strong, healthy lungs. Soldier. Soldier. Bah. Soldier. Hello? Can you hear me? I'm getting another call. Listen, soldier, just keep playing the horn and I'll get back to you. Sorry about that. Quiet all day, and then everyone calls at one time. Okay, let's see here. Tell me when you can hear me. How about now? Hello? Hello? Listen. Listen to me. Listen to me.
Listen to me. Listen to me, my children.
Listen to me. Listen to me. Listen, children. There's girls and boys, well, you know you're the choice. You can do what you say, but you can buy all my toys. If you buy all the help, just go around and get them all. I never lie to you, you know I die for you. Yeah, I love you too, because we will just get consumed and gobble it up. Come on, show us some love, I'll be pulling you on. I'm lying through my teeth to get everything I need. I'll be what you want me to be. That's why I'm dancing, dancing.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
We'll be right back.
voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission:
to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap!
Operator, give me the number for 911.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Can you hear me? Give my creation right!
Hello, everybody. You're listening to Mad Science. That last ruckus was what Thomas clearly stated. I knew exactly what it was about. We got a phone call right in the middle of the show, and it was a kitten rescue. So it looks like I got another cat. So, how you guys doing?
Excellent.
Cool. You know what, guys? On the air, you guys are like, I can't get you motivated, but off the air, you guys are having a really awesome conversation. Y'all throwing me under the bus today or what? Trying
really?
To kill me? That's a lot of stress.
Shenanigans.
Yeah, so we talked about a lot of stuff, and yeah, there was a lot of shenanigans. A phone call that interrupted the show with my favorite ringtone, tump-tumping. I get knocked down, but I get up again. Blah, blah. Don't quit my day job, right?
Right.
All right. Well, anyway, that was an important phone call. Okay, the cat needs a home, so he's got a home. All right. So now back to the subjects at hand. Basically, we talked about static electricity. We talked about plasma. We talked about all kinds of other different stuff. We talked about graphene technology, and now people looking into making batteries using hemp. And that's pretty exciting to me, because if you can build a supercapacitor using hemp, then that means that's something that's readily accessible, because I'm not even so sure that whatever is they're using actually out of the hemp, which is supposedly the waste that from when they actually make clothes, the process leaves a fiber behind or something like that, that is a waste. And that's what they use for the capacitors. So you had mentioned quite some time about kudzu. Now, I'm not positive of exactly what kudzu is, but if it has the same type of fibrous structure that could actually be used to make a capacitor, that's one that would be beneficial, if you see what I'm trying to say here.
Yep.
Because from what I understood from you, if you get it started, then the stuff will grow like wildfire.
Right.
And that's a good thing.
Yep.
So,
unless you can't use it faster than it's growing.
Yeah, but if you can make capacitors out of it, that's pretty doggone impressive. I'm sitting here messing around with a couple balloons trying to do another physics toy. It's pretty impressive. It's pressure related. Anyway, I'll stop doing that and make them racket in the background. And looking into whatever exact fiber and the material of the hemp that they're using, would be beneficial to find out where else whatever plant life out there could potentially have the same results with the material, or maybe even possibly better results. You can learn a lot from nature. And if there's a plant out there that's normally obnoxious that you'd love to get rid of, then you wouldn't have no problem cutting it down in order to use it to build capacitors and such. What do you think? Plan? No plan? Green energy? Alternative energy? Anybody? Going once?
Bueller?
Man, I'll tell you what, you guys like must have been like stayed up too late or something.
All right. I've been doing a little research on the line while you were talking.
Yeah.
I'll get off of that and get back on with you guys and pay more attention.
Cool.
Actually, those guys are talking over my head with all this plasma and stuff. I don't even know what plasma is. All I do is I just know how to use it on a torch.
Well, plasma essentially is all these argon molecules, of course, in my case, that are bouncing off of each other. When you send high energy, like with the open air plasma cutter, that's just taking the nitrogen and whatever else is in the air right around you and energizing. It's banging it into each other. And then at some point, when the energy reaches the plasma state, the Venturi effect actually takes place, where it's actually drawing atmosphere in around it. So I'm almost willing to bet, never tried it because I never messed around with a plasma cutter before, but I'm almost willing to bet that if you put your hand about a foot away from that thing while it's running, you'll actually be able to feel an ion wind around it.
That's interesting.
Because with static electricity, you get an ion wind. With, Van de Graaff generator or Wimshurst or even Tesla coil, when you got a discharge going across a capacitor, from a capacitor across to a spark gap or whatever, you can feel right before that discharge, you can feel an ion wind being generated. So that tells me that the Venturi effect is working.
Yeah.
So that's why you have a plasma cutter that doesn't have to be fed gas, because it's using the atmosphere around it. And even something as simple as dust, could be energized. So, basically, you'd be using dust for fuel. Whatever's in the atmosphere around you, it gets trapped up in that process right there, man.
So, let me ask a question here. In outer space, there is no such thing as a pure vacuum. So, there is something out there. I wonder if you could use an ion generator out there to use it as an actual rocket engine.
I believe so.
They've already done testing on that. It does work. There's not enough material when you get into deep space for it to matter to them. But I mean, if you're already moving fast and you have a big enough scoop, I still say you could probably do it.
Well, I think
not have to carry any fuel, just energy to energize what fuel you pick up as you go.
If we combine ion propulsion with slingshotting around other planets and heavenly bodies, why wouldn't that work? You don't use the ion engine
right
to actually propel the ship, only to direct it, to guide it. In other words, it's already traveling through space. So now you're 2 degrees off of this planet you're going to slingshot around. You just use it as a guiding system to change course.
I think that if you take in the factor into consideration, if you look at the moon's got dust covering it. Where did that dust come from? Micrometeorites and dust in space. So I believe there's literally lots of micrometeorites and dust floating around space. So it's kind of dirty in that vacuum. All right? And so with that said, on the I'll post a link down into the I'll post it in Skype and I'll post it in the chat room. But I drew up a hypothetical ion drive motor that I'd like to get you guys' opinion on, if so to speak, your ideas or whatever, insults or whatever, just so that Okay, I'm going to post it in the chat right now in Skype. So go ahead and click on that link and scroll down. And you will see somewhere at the bottom of that deal. I'm trying to close out a few windows here. Okay, there we go. Now, if you scroll down and you see a danger high voltage sign right underneath the GIF animation of a doggone, what do you call it, solenoid motor, you'll see a picture that has some like oval shape deals on there. That is an ion drive engine. And essentially what you would do is you would use, I got a symbol in there that's supposed to be like argon, but not very good. Anyway, you would use a argon to energize into the plasma state, which in turn, anything that was sucked in between there would be energized by the radiant energy off of that plasma that in turn would be used to propel the dust out the back. So essentially, as you were driving, it was scooping up the fuel and shoving it out the back. Now, if space is a vacuum, like they said, it wouldn't take much thrust in order to get something moving, and the faster you got going, the more stuff you would drag inside, and the more thrust you'd end up with out the back. So eventually, like you talking about slingshotting around the sun or something like that, you could get to be hauling, you know what. So,
yeah.
Are you looking at the picture?
Yes, I am. I like it.
So, if you look real close at that picture, you'll see that on, you can actually right click on there and get a, let me see if I can do this, get a better link. Copy image location and then paste it up here. It should give you a larger picture. Select all. Control V. Enter. No, it's still a small picture.
The thing is, Thomas said that they've already done experiments on it and find that it's not enough power to actually propel a ship, but there is power there. Therefore, it could be used as a course alteration system.
Well, even in Star Trek, they had a pulse drive or something like that, or something that, like, where they go at slow speed.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I honestly think that if this was done right, you could literally get some really good thrust out of it. And so, you know, until I get to space to test it, I couldn't tell you. But if you look at this picture, you'll notice that on each one of them, there is a gate on the side that you can open and close this gate. Like if you want to go forward, you got them both wide open. If you want to go right or left, you close whichever gate pertains to that. And if you want to stop, you close both gates, and so you're not sucking any more fuel in.
Right.
Yeah.
Huh.
So anyway, that's what that little picture's all about. That's an ion drive motor.
Interesting.
And you can find that on the podcast page for those of you out there listening. If you jump over to ShazizRadio.com and go to Mad-Science-Podcast, and you'll find the picture that I've been sitting here talking. And ironically enough, I just ran into the picture that I was talking about earlier that I couldn't remember. It's helium, neon, argon, krypton, and xenon. Are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of the noble gases out there. Are there any more that you guys can think of?
Not right offhand.
But either way, helium got a nice kind of you know, light purple. Neon's got a kind of orange.
My mic was muted, man. Radon is in that same line.
Cool.
So, careful there.
Yeah. So yeah, you don't want to use radon. That's not a healthy one.
Well, if you are, you better make sure you're using it right. Don't pull Fukushima on us all.
Yeah. So just go with the ones that are pretty much safe. Helium, neon, argon, krypton, and xenon. Now these are the noble gases that, you know, you don't have to worry about blowing up on you. Now they will pressurize, and argon can bust a container when it gets energized into the fourth state of matter, being plasma. it can pressurize that container. So if you keep pumping energy to it, it's going to be like blowing up a balloon. You'll pop it. But once that gas expands, the process stops, and that's that. So, matter of fact, in one of my gizmos, I actually put a crystal that was at the right frequency that it should shatter and bust the glass, which basically made a fuse. So.
So you're what you're saying is, if you're going to use argon, that you want it in a container with a negative pressure.
Well, a slight vacuum would be fine. And actually, it works better with just a slight vacuum. The more you vacuum things down, the tighter those molecules get to the point where it's harder to move them.
Okay.
Same thing with pressure. You overpressurize something. Like, try putting a balloon inside of a bottle and then see if you can blow that balloon up. You can't do it. There has to be some place for that pressure to go that you're trying to force in that balloon. That's why if you see that physics toy, the video, the first physics toy video that I made, there's a hole in the side. And that hole is to release the pressure that is being created by the expansion of that balloon and pushing the pressure out the other side.
Yeah, I saw a guy do some experiments on YouTube. He had with vacuum chamber, he had one of the bell jar vacuum container deals.
Yeah.
And put marshmallows in the big old thing. Marshmallows blew up about 4 or 5 times their size, but when he released the vacuum and let air back in, they turned around and shrank right back to normal. It was neat. And he also put a balloon in there, partially blown up, full of vacuum, the balloon just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to mention that, though.
My old friend Dublin's listening in from Spain. Cool. So, we gotta get Dublin back on the show again sometime. Anyway, go over there to the podcast page and you can see that little picture I was talking about. You can also see the pictures with the argon and stuff like that. Basically, the podcast page is a bunch of idea pages, all right? A lot of diagrams that give you a little bit of ideas and stuff to work on. That solenoid motor that Jermaine worked on, if you go over there and look on that podcast page, you'll see an engine that I designed many years back that basically works off the same exact concept, with the exception it has a rotor system that basically ignites each one of the energizes each one of the solenoids like a distributor would fire your spark plugs in the car. And so basically that's what that design's all about. But I actually made an animated GIF to show you how this thing would function. Pretty cool. Alrighty then. So, where do we go to from here? Projects, and yet even more projects. There's a lot of YouTubers out there doing a lot of alternative energy. I even say don't exclude those who's out there trying to pull a fast one. Watch what you're doing and see what kind of stuff you can learn. Like the guy that tried to tell everybody he had a free energy device, essentially made a battery device. And Shaziz broke the news. That's how he did it, man. There wasn't no hidden batteries. It was the battery.
Hey, Shaziz, yeah. What would happen if you had a solenoid and you wired it and wound it right and hit it with the static electricity? Would it operate?
Depends. But I know that you'll get enough flyback off of that to get high voltage. So you can
I'm just saying that if you had, static electricity built up in something and you wanted to discharge it, but you discharge it into a solenoid.
I'd have to test it out, but I think if the static charge was high enough, yeah, you definitely could get it to do that. Because anytime there's a discharge, you're gonna get a magnetic field. Charge or discharge of voltage or static energy, whatever.
There's a professor, he's a physics professor and he's got a lot of videos on. His last name's Sumner. Something other Sumner. But anyway, he was showing how easy it is to make static electricity. He had a vinyl briefcase.
Yeah.
And he took some cat's fur and just pounded on it about 4 or 5 times. And then he takes this aluminum pie plate and touches the briefcase, and then sticks his finger to the pie plate, and it arcs. And he just kept doing it over and over again. And he said he could do it forever.
Yeah, there's so many different ways to produce static energy. It's crazy, you know.
If you made a car out of vinyl and you put a cat's fur on your antenna, so as you were running down the road, it's wobbling back and forth, beating on the car, and your car engine just happened to be a solenoid engine, then all you have to do is take that cat's fur and rub it on the car to start, and that would start the engine.
Well, think about your tennis shoes. Whenever you're rubbing your shoes across the floor, tennis shoes are made out of rubber, but yet you'll still build up a static charge on it.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is I don't want to rub my tennis shoes. I'm going to set my butt down and ride.
Yeah.
So you take the cat's fur and the wind that's being created by the car moving rubs the cat fur on the car, and the car is made of vinyl.
You know your tires are made of rubber, right?
Yeah.
So what if your mud flaps are like dragging on your tires?
Yeah.
And your mud flaps were made out of...
Some metal dragging on the ground to ground the car because it would build up so much static electricity.
You keep saying rubbing. The triboelectric effect is it's not a rubbing effect. It's actually a touching and removing effect. So it wouldn't have to rub. You could have two wheels that are rolling around so that they're making contact and then breaking contact again, and that creates the effect.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you save on friction big time and wear and tear on your whatever you're rubbing against whatever you're rubbing. Because the more you rub against two things against each other, the more wear you're going to get.
Yeah. So essentially, using how the Van de Graaff does it, there's different methods of how to build a Van de Graaff. One is you use glass and a rubber band and a plastic. It's just the different materials exchanging electrons and carrying it over to some combs on either side, one for the ground and one for the positive side. So there's no reason why you couldn't actually develop static electricity off the doggone tires as it's going by.
But you guys have not answered my original question. Will static electricity activate a solenoid?
I believe so, because you can charge a capacitor, and the capacitor in turn can activate a solenoid.
Okay.
I think you'd have to be able to control the direction of the static discharge, though, because the discharge is not static anymore. Once the electrons are in motion, you're working with either DC or AC power, and in this case, you're working with DC, but you have to know for a fact which direction that electron flow is constantly going to be going, so you'd probably want some sort of diode effect to keep it going that same direction, or be able to switch which direction it's going through the coil, so you can control which way the magnetic field is going to be generated by it.
Well, that's where the spark gap would come in handy about, because the spark gap is essentially a diode, because the energy has enough energy to jump across to one side, but it can't make it back the other side. So you essentially,
what's stopping it from going back the other way?
Because the pressure on the one side is higher than on the opposite side. Once that capacitor got fully charged up to the point where it can now discharge, it's going to take the shortest path of least resistance. It's going to take the shortest spark gap. So you can actually guide the capacitor to discharge where you want it by shortening the gap.
But if you had a surge of static coming from the other direction for some reason or another, it could jump across that gap going the other direction then, couldn't it?
Yeah, the higher pressure is going to win out.
Right. But I'm talking about using something that pressure is not an issue. We're using Maxwell's demon, where it only opens the door one way. It will not let it go back the other way at all.
Yeah.
No matter what.
Interesting.
And there's got to be a way to be able to do that by using capacitance plates.
Yeah.
When you charge a capacitance plate up, it becomes basically a negative field. So if you've got one that basically is aloof there in the right location, I'm guessing that no matter which direction the static charge is coming from, because it gets dumped into that plate system first, it would basically create a diode effect to resist it going the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And if you put four of those together, you've got a bridge rectifier, which means it doesn't matter what direction it's coming from, it's going where you want it no matter what.
Okay, have you guys ever sat in the house on a windy day and heard the door humming? You know, mm-hmm. a little piece of metal in the door frame to keep cold air out and the hot air in?
Mm-hmm.
Well, when the wind blows real hard, that thing gets to vibrating like a reed on a flute. I'm not a flute, but a clarinet. Mm-hmm. But if you made the reed out of the clarinet out of the right materials, as you blew on it, it would vibrate back and forth, and you get that touching effect like Thomas was talking about.
Right. Every time it touches, it's going to discharge electrons off its surface.
Uh-huh. And the car running down the daggone highway at 60 miles an hour would do it.
Well, yeah, you know, that, and like I said, the tires and, you know, whatever material that you can drag across those doggone tires, same thing, man.
Right.
And all you need is combs to pick up that energy as the tire comes over to the other side, from whichever direction. But regardless, knowing how easy it is to make static electricity, you could make a wind turbine that would be so incredibly quiet that, you know, you wouldn't even hear a doggone thing going outside of maybe if you didn't design the turbine itself to, you know, go with the wind. You get some blades that'll hum at certain speeds. You see what I'm saying? In the generator itself. But if you had something as simple as, like he was talking earlier, fur going across a vinyl or something like that, building up a static charge and then dumping it down into some huge supercapacitors, it wouldn't take much wind to turn that thing. You see what I'm saying?
You should really go have a look at the triboelectric effect, like literally look it up and look at the... They've got charts that show all the different materials, which have the strongest one way and which has the strongest the other way.
Yeah.
This is what I was talking about before, using plastic sheets that are a neutral material, coating one side with styrene. You melt down the styrofoam peanuts with xylene or something like that, paint it on one side, and then you coat the other side with polyurethane paint, because those two on those charts are the strongest positive and negatively charged triboelectric materials. Just air blowing between those particles in the air are going to carry electrons from one side to the other. Put them close together and you should be able to build up quite a bit of a charge without having to be high off the ground.
Well, that's impressive, because you could make all kinds of there's all kinds of implications you could do. You could go with that.
Right.
But so, yeah, you can
if you painted the surface of the car with strips of that, real thin strips, with that neutral barrier in between each layer, and use the you know, basically put like a you probably have to coat the car with paint, then coat it with strips of metal, like a paint on metal, or a conductor like a graphite paint or something like that, and then go over top of that, each alternating in between the strips. With the urethane and the styrene, then as you drive down the road and the air is flowing over the car, it's going to basically create a static charge.
Yep. And
worst possible scenario is really good, and that is that it wouldn't create enough static electricity to run the car, but it would help a battery system last longer.
Well, as I say, if you're using regenerative braking and a couple other processes, It would basically make it so that you'd almost have to use next to no energy to get around.
Yep.
Because you'd be collecting a bunch of energy from the environment.
Yep.
Exactly.
The only problem I see with that whole scenario is whenever it rains, that car isn't going to run for, you know, it's not going to run very well. you're not going to get a lot of electron flow off of that, the top.
You know. Hey, have you ever known anything that was absolutely perfect?
Yeah, but see, you could always put a backup system in for the rainy days, such as the piezoelectrics.
Right.
Exactly.
And actually, the fluctuation of the metal, because believe it or not, when you're driving down the road, your fenders are flexing in and out from the air pressure that's surrounding them. And so, if you're driving down the road and hitting bumps and vibrations and the wind pressure is flexing your side panels on your deal, why not use that energy?
Yeah, I think actually if we had...
Like inside the tire itself. Why not?
Well, I think the there's a misnomer there about not being enough energy to run the car. I think the only reason it wouldn't be enough power is because it's built too clumsily. If it was built with a fine enough process, you could probably get enough power out of that. And there's probably a way to basically get it to work even in the rain by coating it then afterwards with or having like walls of material sticking up off it that... have that hydrophobic effect.
Yeah.
That way the water is literally running across the surface of it the way the Rain-X treats water as it hits a windshield, and the material down underneath, there's still enough room that the air can get down between there, but there's not enough for the water droplets to reach down between there.
When it's raining outside, how would that affect the humidity inside the car?
What, putting a hydrophobic material on the outside?
No, I'm saying this is different from what you're talking about. Humidity is one of the factors that helps static electricity build up. Like in humid climates, you can get better static. And so,
no, actually, it's dry environments. Humidity discharges it.
Okay, so now I guess that backs up what I was sinks what I was getting ready to say about, you know, because whenever it's raining outside, the humidity in your car, because of the heat, should raise up, right? Unless you're using like electric heat, in which case electric heat is drier.
Right.
So maybe that would be the key.
You'd want to basically keep not worry about the humidity inside of the car unless it's getting too low, so that way they're not getting shocked by the power that's being generated by the outside of the car.
Yeah, that stink gets just zapped in the back of the neck by your headliner. Yeah, that might cause a problem.
I'll say, I've burnt somebody bad enough they had a scar for years from just the doing shock wars where you run around on the carpet in your sock feet, so... You can only imagine what it'd be like if a whole car was doing something like that was designed specifically to do that.
Yeah, but the whole...
I don't think they'd have to worry about, about getting a haircut again, because I don't think they'd have a head left.
Yeah. The whole key about all of what we're talking about here, though, is that it is possible with the right engineering to get the car and all the motions and what's going on naturally around the car as it zooms down the road. Everything from the wind going by to the wheels spinning around, to the heat of the sun, or the rain pounding on the side of the deal, or the metal flexing, or the shock absorbers going up and down, the tires basically spinning around, and the inside of the tires, piezoelectrics, whatever. You could do so much. Strategically engineer this car to literally pick up any potential energy.
And the Achilles heel to all this is?
The energy companies ain't going to like it?
No, the Achilles heel to all this is the manufacturing capability. Once the manufacturing capability is brought into the hands of the masses, the energy company can just go, suck an egg.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing they can do to stop the entire world from doing what it decides it wants to do.
Well, one time I decided, just for giggles, I put a old bicycle generator with a turbine on the side of my car, and I was driving down the road trying to generate electricity as I was driving down the road. I had to go I started off with a 1.5 volt light bulb and burned it out. Then went up to a 3 volt light bulb, burned it out. Went up to a 9 volt light bulb, burned it out. And then finally ended up with a 12 volt light bulb, which seemed to last the longest on the deal. But the sudden surges in speed and all that, the energy would decrease, obviously. The slower you went and the faster you went, it would increase. And it would get to a stage where it would burn the light bulb out.
Right. Now that's a lot of power. Now you see why they call wind power and solar power dirty electricity.
Yeah.
Because it's not constant. It's not consistent all the time. It's not always available. There's never a chance that it won't surge and suddenly throw a whole bunch of power through all at once and possibly blow a bunch of stuff out.
Yeah.
Like that's what causes people to lose power whenever there's a ice storm or something like that, is that you get a couple lines that get busted, the power can't flow to where it's supposed to be going, so it's all being surged to just one or two transformers in an area. Those go out, and when they go out, then the next group of transformers have to handle the load, and it just keeps working its way across the grid.
Yeah. But see, there's methods by which you can make a dump load so that if the power surges instantaneously, I mean, we got surge protectors on our computers in case of a surge, it don't blow your computer out. Mm-hmm. So why not use the same process that it
a surge protector, though, is a waste of power. Yeah. You need a surge collection unit so that whenever there is a surge, you can dump that into something and have the surge protector only work whenever the surge collectors are completely full.
Yeah.
When there's a dip, then you use that power. But that costs money to build all that for a power company that can't get people motivated unless they hand them those green slips of toilet paper. Oh, they're going to want to try to charge you for it.
Yep.
Only way to get around that is if we start building them ourselves, you know? That means basically when you connect to the grid with your wind power and your solar power and everything else, you have a big capacitor bank, you're storing your power up, and you don't allow that power to leave your home other than the amount that's the average that is constantly being produced, so that they're always getting the exact same amount of power, and then start pushing for laws that say if you've got that system in place, then they need to stop charging you to store your dirty power and start paying you back for giving them clean power.
Yep.
Well, if we use a 3D printer, we could capacitor is nothing more than conductive materials that are separated by non-conductive materials, correct?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So if we use a 3D printer, we can print layers and layers and layers of this stuff in the car body itself. So the car body itself would actually be the capacitor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Inside, you use it for the actual structure that you're going to use for your frame and your body.
Yes, and then the outside of the car is that material that just wind blowing across it will make electricity, will make static electricity.
You hit on exactly what I was talking about, though, the manufacturing capability.
Well, we have that, don't we?
Well,
we have some, but when it's finished being developed, graphene you're talking about, we can just print that out of carbon dioxide straight out of the air.
The thing about it is,
we have that.
The thing about it is that that's why I'm so excited about the hemp capacitors and the graphene, is because it's something that the average Joe could actually make, you know. And if you could build these capacitors, and you know that you can store energy in a capacitor that can in turn run things like solenoid motors. If you look at that solenoid motor that Jermaine did, I was so impressed with it because it had a lot of torque. You know, if they're designed properly, you could build a complete solenoid engine. There's several of them out there on YouTube that mimic the design that I did many years ago. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, with static charges being charged in up capacitors, and once those capacitors get fully charged and then discharge over into a solenoid that pushes down some force that turns a camshaft or whatever, you know, it's unlimited. And you could actually turn, you know, any old creek out there, you know, that had a constant flow of water into a huge Van de Graaff generator just by making a belt system that would go up out of the creek over, you know, across a couple materials and build up a static charge to charge up a capacitor bank, or build a windmill or wind turbine or whatever. There's so many different methods, including the one you explained to about the different materials that you could get it to build up a static charge just by the wind. You know, the atmospheric grip, they've been pulling static energy out of the doggone air for years, They got a couple hundred foot towers up there that have some wire that goes across there with carbon, nanocarbon on there that are pulling 2,000 volts out of the air. There's an actual equation that tells you how many feet you got to go up for how many voltage, how much voltage. There is a reason why radio towers have big ground wires on there. It's not just to stabilize them. It's to keep for whoever goes on to work on it from getting the lightning bolt to the face. You know? And essentially, the lightning rods on top of old barns and stuff like there used to be thought that, you know, in case the lightning hit that rod, that it would just go straight to the ground. Well, in reality, it's dispersing that energy before it actually gets to the point where there's a lightning rod or lightning bolt. So that means to tell me that there's already energy coming down that line. You see what I mean?
Yep.
What if you put a spark gap in between that and you saw that just by putting it on top of your barn, you could pull static electricity right out of the doggone air? Now, that'd kind of be counterproductive towards the lightning bolt, because lightning is going to take the shortest path to ground, even though it's coming from the ground, if you understand what I'm trying to say there, because you got to have the atmosphere above it in order to be energized high enough. But when that occurs, you got a lightning bolt going down and jumping across the spark gap in the process, something's going to fail. That's a lot of voltage, man. A lot of pressure.
Yeah.
There's a reason why people fly through the air whenever they get hit by a lightning bolt. You know, a lot of pressure involved. But either way, nonetheless, it's still energy from nature. Flat out. And so, you know, I'd like to do some experiments, get me a 30, 40 foot tower and run a wire that's insulated all the way up to the top of that tower and then a spark gap down at the bottom to see if I can get measurable voltage that close to the ground, which I do believe is possible because of the way that radio antennas function and such. And radio antennas have to be grounded. You know, they're either grounded to the frame of the car or they're grounded to the ground. There's a reason for that. So what do you guys think?
I'm sitting here staring at this picture you have on your website. The one with the solenoid motor?
Yeah.
I can't even take my eyes off of it. I don't see why it wouldn't work.
Of course it would work. They got motors out there. Google it up, solenoid motor. You'll see people had designed similar versions to it. Not exactly the way that mine are, because mine has a flywheel and a magnetron that is actually controlling the timing. They use circuit boards to control the timing of the pulse, but mine would function just as good, if not better, because you could actually time each one of these out perfectly. It just like the same way that a distributor works in your car. The distributor goes around and it's set at certain times so that it will fire on the intake portion of it. Once the fuel is injected into the cylinder, it comes around and fires at the correct time. You don't want it firing on the exhaust port, you want it firing on the intake side. And so, with that said, now as the camshaft's going around on the solenoid motor, you want this thing to fire when the lobe of the cam is up on its highest point, and then fire and pushing it down, which puts the next one up in line to the highest point, and so on. And there's a lot of torque to that. They actually use solenoids for locking mechanisms in your car and locking mechanisms for time locks on banks and stuff like that, because that magnetic force is just drawing a metal object one way or another, pushing it out or bringing it back in. So, there you go, man. We could actually build a static electricity generator that would put out enough energy to run the solenoid motor. In my version that you see and watching there in that GIF animation, you can see how it's functioning. You can watch the lines. Every time one of them pulses, you can see where those lines are going to which solenoid at the same time. One of them's going to the front on one side and it's going to the back on the other side, so that they are working in sequence with each other.
Yep. like it.
And if you looked, if you learned anything from Jermaine's little solenoid motor, you can see how his solenoid motor is actually doing a little bit of wobbling because it wasn't made precision. But what it tells me when I see that wobbling like that, there's a force going on. He's got a lot of torque going on that thing. All right? And electricity has a lot of torque, a lot of pressure being pushed down, you know, or spun around or whatever. You know, DC power being, you know, strongest. But even with an AC motor, you could get some really decent results if it was engineered properly. Imagine an AC motor that would not only push it down one way, but then it would suck it back up the other way. So it's assisting in the lift, it's assisting in the push down at the same time. What do you think?
Yeah, oh, you think the same thing.
Seriously, again? All right, they're going to have to wait on that one. I'll get knocked down, but I'll get up again. All right, so, like, well, you guys want to take another music break?
Yeah.
All right, well, let me see if I can find...
Sounds good.
Find something worthy of putting on there. I don't like to have a whole lot of tunes on there because we're not like a music station per se. We're just kind of like a think tank, mad science channel, and fix the world kind of issues and such. So with that said, you're listening to Mad Science at www.shazizradio.com, and somebody just called me up. See, we're all duct tape and baling wire here, so that's what makes us, you know, kind of likable guys, because we're just the average Joe out here doing what we do and trying to help each other out and such. So
you sure we're not an average MacGyver?
Maybe. Hey, man, I like some of the things MacGyver did. if he can escape prison with a chewing gum wrapper, then he's got my vote. Yeah, and I used a chewing gum wrapper when the doggone fuse blew in my car and I didn't have an extra fuse and I needed to get where I was going. So there's a thin piece of foil on the outside of that chewing gum wrapper. If you cut a little shred off that, you can put it down on your fuse and it'll actually blow if it gets too hot, but it will function long enough to get you to the store to buy a new fuse. All right, so I'm going to throw out a couple of tunes, and then we'll be back to polish off the show. Everybody stay tuned. You're listening to the Mad Science Show. Peace and love.
Can you remember?
game is going on in here? What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Yeah, could you describe the ruckus, sir? Anyway, folks, you're listening to Mad Science Show. That last doggone phone call. I don't know why people think you gotta call me right in the middle of a radio show anyway, man. Gets on my nerves. Either way, that was a prank phone call. Somebody telling me I wanted a trip to the Bahamas after I answered a few questions and I knew all the answers. And so, basically, I want a trip to the Bahamas. Ha ha, hearty har har to the funny guy or gal who sent that to me. Anyway, it looks like we lost Raymond and Thomas in the call. Don't know where they went, so it's just down to me for the last few minutes of the show. Hope you all can deal with that. But basically, we're talking about all kinds of different stuff today, static electricity and the modern research of using hemp to make supercapacitors and stuff. So with that said, I'm really excited about the possibility of using hemp for supercapacitors. I like the graphene stuff that Robert Murray Smith was doing. And so I'm hoping that these folks get something like this really going on. It seems like Robert Murray Smith's done like a lot of good research that he's got really good results with as far as charge time and discharge and all that kind of stuff. And so with my plasma technology that I'm working on and moving energy from point A to point B rapidly using high voltage, which is pressure, I think that we're really on to something that will be substantial and easy for the average Joe to replicate. That's the whole key, whether or not they can replicate what it is that we're going to try to show them on YouTube or whatever. See, there's a laws of physics set out there that you can't really defy. We're not trying to defy any of the known laws of physics. We're just trying to get the physics to work on our behalf as opposed to doing what they want to do. So, you know, I keep saying, if you don't want to invoke Lenz's law, then don't invoke Lenz's law. We know how it occurs. Anytime you energize a coil of wire, you get a second force that they call Lenz effect. And so with that said, if you're taking energy off of the generator head and allowing that circuit to flow back into the same generator head that you're trying to take the energy off of, then essentially you're invoking Lenz's law and you're causing this thing to bog down for every bit of load you put on it, an extra light bulb. The more light bulbs, the harder that effect comes into play until eventually it acts as a brake and locks down the rotor and you no longer get more energy out. So the key is to take that energy off the generator that you want, move it into a completely different state of matter, which is still energy. Take that energy, move it rapidly across, change it in back into usable current that you can then in turn run your load off of. So you don't have to, your generator, the motor that's actually turning your generator doesn't have to work hard. The generator head doesn't slow down on you. You don't get that back EMF or cogging effect or whatever. And so it just opens up all kinds of possibilities, all kinds of different options. We talked about on there about taking redesigning a motor or motor vehicle, an automobile, to literally use the forces of energy that would normally be considered a hindrance. You know, they talk about cars being aerodynamic, the way they design them so the wind will go around them and such. And so you know that wind, you could use that wind for power. You can use the wheels turning for power. You can use the heat of the braking for power. You could use the heat off of the internal combustion engine for power. You could build up static charges. You can use the solar for power. There's so many different ways, thermoelectrics and even hydroelectrics in a downpour or something like that. Or, piezoelectrics for, the vibration of the car, the raindrops hitting the piezoelectrics, or even the shock absorbers as they're going up and down, some magnetic induction going on there. The weight of the car bouncing up and down, bringing magnets through coils of wire. so many different options, even when you're using your windshield wipers or your lights. If you could find out the right spectrum to run a solar, you could have little secondary systems picking up little charges here and there. Little charges such as, you know, your seat when you're sitting in your car. It's got springs underneath it, and you're bouncing up and down inside your car, you know, especially if you got bad shock absorbers. Either way, using every bit of energy that that car is producing and having going on to get you from point A to point B to putting something back into the system as opposed to taking away from the system, that's what we're talking about. So I'm looking forward to all the research out there in hemp technology as far as capacitors and batteries and graphene technology and any knowledge into solar, what the actual light spectrum is that gets solar panels going, or if it's the heat itself, you know, whatever. Knowing how all these things work and taking all these anomalies, putting them together, pieces of the puzzle to actually produce a device that is what some would call perpetual motion, what I'm just calling using it to be its most efficient possible. You know, self-contained, whatever you do with that car is going to produce some sort of charge. It's going to be sent somewhere into a storage bank that could actually be built into a carbon fiber frame or something like that, you know. That we know carbon fiber is a really strong material, and you could actually build it within, you know, the frame itself could actually be the capacitor, could be the battery. You know, the skin of the car could actually be, you know, picking up static energy or vibrational energy or anything. These anomalies that I keep sharing with you and all these different little ideas out there are only as far as you're willing, you know, only as good as far as you're willing to take them. And if you expand on all these ideas, it's hard to say where you could go with it. And so that's what the Mad Science Show is all about. We throw the ideas out there, give you something to run with, give you some different ideas and, you know, basic science that you can learn from. And if you want to take the time to experiment with them, you might be surprised at what you find out, you know. Plasma technology, thermoelectrics, hydroelectrics, wind power, solar panel. There's so many different subjects that we talk about on here, and you can take them as far as you want. And so, with that said, you know, if you can't find free energy, you're simply not looking hard enough, because we're surrounded in it. We're floating in a sea of free energy. It's just, are we going to get together and use it properly? Or are we going to keep wasting it? That's the question. So, everybody, you've been listening to Mad Science. Hope you enjoyed the show. Stay tuned tomorrow for the Knights of the Round Table, which is our 200th show, which will probably be starting 1 hour earlier than normal, at least on ShazizRadio.com, because there's some things that need to be done tomorrow. And so, it will be from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Central Time for the Knights of the Round Table tomorrow. Everybody, peace and love. Take care.
Crap.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap! Ah! Ah! Ah!
Operator, give me the number for 911.